21st. So today is September 21st, and it's after 2:20 in the afternoon. This is Kim Schaefer. I'm here with Michael Lamont and his attorneys, who will spell their names because I would get it wrong. And we're going to talk about CDOs. Michael's a former co-head of CDOs at Deutsche Bank.
Sure. Chris Boning from Paul Weiss, and last name is spelled B-O-E-H-N-I-N-G.
Michael Klunder, also from Paul Weiss, K-L-U-N-D-R.
Thank you.
And for the record, if you would, we'd like to have your consent on the record for the taping of this interview.
Of course. Thank you.
So I'm with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, the independent commission, bipartisan commission established by Congress to investigate the causes of the financial crisis. And we've held a number of hearings and we're in the midst of writing a report that will be submitted to Congress and the president due in December. I have no reason to believe that you would say anything that's inaccurate, but were you to do so, that under statute would be considered a criminal offense. So I want to warn you of that, and again, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule for this. I have interviewed some people who used to work for you. And I did review my notes of those interviews. I think I'd like to start first with you just explaining your position, your time at Deutsche Bank, and then also actually your professional background since college, and then we'll move into the subject matter.
Sure. Perhaps we'll start with since college. I could go chronologically. So I graduated from college in 1990. I then attended law school and graduated in 1993. I practiced law in Texas for 1 year. I then worked from 1994 to 1995 at a commodity trading advisor in New York. From 1995 to 1996, I worked for a trading firm in Chicago at the CBOE. 1997, I graduated from NYU with a master's degree in statistics, and I also joined First Boston as an associate in their asset finance group. In 2000, I joined Deutsche Bank as a vice president in their lead asset finance business. I can't recall the exact product title. At some point in the next year or two, I moved into the CDO group. Then in 2003, at Deutsche Bank, I became head of CDO. Co-head and head of CDO structuring within the CDO primary business, the name of the group I worked. And in, I believe, 04, I became co-head of the CDO primary business. And at some point, you know, I think 02 or 03, I was named a managing director as well.
I'm sorry, I'm confused by the different co-head titles. What was the difference?
Right, in 2000, and sorry, my dates are a bit murky, but in 2003, I was appointed co-head of CDO primary structuring, and I became head of CDO primary structuring, I think late 03, early 04, and in 2004, I became co-head of the CDO primary business.
So not just structuring?
Not just structuring, that's right.
So what I said at the beginning of the interview was accurate?
It was accurate. I would add that I was not co-head of CDOs at Deutsche Bank. We had a number of CDO businesses. I was co-head of CDO primary business in the United States, globally.
Very good. Okay. Useful distinction. I'd like to start, given your longevity in this business, actually, with just your as to why and how the business grew to be as large as it did.
So your question is why and how did the CDO business grow as large as it did? Certainly the CDO business increased by volume and size a bit from 2000 on. The CDO business in the 90s was primarily a business of securitizing leverage loans, what the market knows as CLOs. And that business, those businesses were typically a part of high yield banking within investment banks. And they tended to be, at least by the standards of the last few years, fairly small. Around 2000, businesses began to expand into other asset types. It was always part of the business, but the CDO businesses across the street began to take a more active role in securitizing trust preferred securities, asset-backed securities, emerging more, and other more esoteric assets. Project finance loans, I think, began in 1998. Emerging markets was in there somewhere, a variety of other asset types. And those developments, as you might expect, fed on one another. So as the CDO groups expanded, the technology grew in terms of what investors were willing to purchase on a tranche basis, in terms of what the ranges were willing to raise and spend resources on, the businesses really naturally grew. At its core, of course, CDOs are about arbitrage. So, it's a factual statement to make that these CDOs only work if you can package together debt, collateralized debt obligations, and sell the tranche pieces at a much lower cost than what was bought, but to create attractive structures. So as these technologies developed and expanded from broadly CLOs, collateralized loan obligations in the 90s, that arbitrage was found and utilized in the asset classes I mentioned, trust preferred, asset-backed securities, subprime, project finance, emerging markets, so that the CDO businesses across the street in some ways became sort of, I would describe them, the technology became a toolkit to apply to different assets. And it continued to increase as time passed. Synthetics began to play a role in 2002-2003, first corporate synthetics, so CDS on synthetics, backed by investment-grade corporate exposures. Same thing happened with leveraged loans in 2004 on a synthetic basis. We saw with ABS beginning in 2005. That was a part of the growth story. One part of the growth story, of course, is that CDO technology begets supply of the assets. It happened in Trust Preferred, where CDO Trust Preferred technology unlocked the demand of smaller cap banks to issue Trust Preferred securities to market. Or previously in the 90s, if they wanted to raise capital, they probably would have been faced with raising just equity. The same thing, to an extent, happened on the ABS CDO side, where the fact that CDO technology existed made increased issuance volumes more possible.
Sorry, it's just I want to make sure I understand what you're saying, and we're clear about it because it's a really important point. So allow me to restate and then correct whatever I have misstated. I believe your suggestion is that the existence of the CDO methodology helped increase demand for certain types of underlying assets. Now, what you're saying helped sort of create the market, an expanded market for trust preferreds,
particularly for trust preferreds, where in the 90s, it's not a market I'm so familiar with. Deutsche Bank is not a big player in that for a variety of reasons. On the CDO side, in the 90s, there just wasn't much small cap or micro cap trust preferred issuance. There's nowhere to go with it. But with the advent of CDO technology applied to that product beginning in 1999, banks of asset sizes, 200 million to a billion, now that a market they can access. So the demand that the CDO methodology created the supply. When supply creates the demand, it's a bit of a virtuous, the word you like to use, I might say virtuous circle, but certainly a circle that all the pieces fit together.
I interrupted, please.
And it's worth noting that the CDO methodology did accomplish very different things. And the trust preferred business we just described was similar to the business of securitizing leveraged loans, or different than the business of securitizing investment grade corporate risk in a synthetic manner. So as the market grew, CDOs came to be a technology that accomplished a lot of different things. Methodology branched out so that by 2007, you could point to securitizations for trust preferred, leveraged loans, asset-backed high-grade securities, asset-backed mezzanine securities, hedge fund interest, collateralized fund obligations, project finance securitizations, all on the what many would think, I think, of as a traditional collateralized debt obligation, where there are cash assets packaged together and securitized. But at the same time, CDOs grew into synthetic form of the market quite a bit. Investment grade corporates, leveraged loan synthetics, asset-backed synthetics, emerging market synthetics.
And just to clarify, did your responsibilities, I asked a broad question, but were you responsible for all of those different types of CDOs?
I was not. CDO primary, with some exceptions, was the business of working with asset managers who selected assets in a CDO, their Deutsche Bank, cash assets in a CDO, cash bonds. Deutsche Bank would provide financing during the asset selection period, and then Deutsche Bank would distribute to the market the bonds issued by the CDO. There are exceptions. That was broadly the business. So, for example, Deutsche Bank might work with the full answer to your question. Deutsche Bank would work with a manager like BlackRock in the asset-backed space. BlackRock would engage Deutsche Bank to provide financing to a Cayman Island company, which BlackRock would manage. They would aggregate assets prior to issuance of CDO securities. Then Deutsche Bank would distribute the securities issued by the Cayman Island company, usually rated AAA down through unrated equity in the form of preferred shares, and that was the business. And we did that in our group with asset-backed securities, leveraged loans, trust preferreds, and there were a number of other different CDO businesses that were back across the street, which were also CDO businesses, but were quite different. CDOs, say, of commercial real estate assets, not part of our business. Synthetic CDOs, corporate assets, investment grade corporates, which is not part of our business, as a business, emerging markets, certain European CDOs that were done in the way described, because they're done in Europe, and part of the locally with country teams. So it became actually, after question about the growth of the CDO market, it grew into a lot of different channels. My responsibility, though, in CDO primary business was what I think most would describe as the classic managed CDO business. It wasn't so different from the business of securitizing loans into CLOs that started in the late 80s. It just happened to use a few different asset types. Crops, securities,
so if I remember my statistics, I think from focusing now on ABS CDOs, the overall market volume doubled from 2003 to 2004, doubled again from 2004 to 2005, and again 2005 to 2006. So what was the jet propulsion there?
Right. I would see the numbers, I agree with you, I would see the numbers as 45 in 2004, 75 in 2005, 180 in 2006, and about 140 first half of 2007. I certainly agree that the growth was very strong. The primary engine of growth in that period was really on the high-grade ABS side, and the obvious, those were CDOs, in which the collateral consisted of asset-backed securities rated single A and double A, and including primarily residential mortgage securities and CDOs for residential mortgage securities. And that was really the engine of growth. I have some numbers. in, I would say, of the proportion of issuance in those years, Javier was probably a solid 3/4. I guess, maybe more. Those deals became, grew exponentially. So I think that starting in, I can pick up some numbers to pick it up. I will remember this for just a moment in terms of the high grade versus the group. But it was primarily high grade. There's a really exponential growth happened in 06 from 05, where certain dealers resized their issuance volume quite a bit, particularly on the high grade side.
And from the data that I've seen, it would be particularly suited for
UBS. In the ABS space.
And from what I've seen in the data, you were actually predominantly more active in the mezzanine space rather than the concrete.
Yes. If you look at one of the numbers I do have at hand, if you look at, we spent a lot of time with our management going very far to the business in the pre-time where you suggest. Talk about strategy, and some of the numbers I recall using were on the high-grade side, I believe from 05 to 07, super senior issuance was about $50 billion from Merrill, $25 from Citi, $13 from CS, and then a variety of parties at $5 to $10 billion. And I just don't recall the total, so it's a large number, $150 billion, or $3 billion after 07. On the mezzanine side, the numbers I recollect are UBS, I believe, a 5 to 7 to $22 billion of super senior. Merrill was 15, we did 11, CS did 11, and then it tapered off in there. So as you can see from the deal sheet you had shown me earlier, it appeared to be Deutsche Bank, managed CEO issuance, primarily with some exceptions from 2001 on. Our focus, our conscious choice of focus, was really in the ABS space, which was really exclusively mezzanine.
And since that was you were suggesting that was a strategic decision, kindly explain that strategy.
Absolutely. The numbers we've been talking about in this conversation are very large, obviously. And, we had limits within our business, and that's what we were permitted to do, which broadly in U.S. CDO primary consists of $3 to $4 billion of risk on our lines at any one time, actual funded risk we were taking. That said, our management obviously saw the issuance away and asked us, hey, well, perhaps we should think about competing with the competition. And the view, our view and our management's view as well, was that it was a tough risk to take. There's a subtle reason why it's important in that from the beginning of the CLO business in the late 80s, the way the CDO business was constructed, the way the risk worked in the managed CDO business, as I described, was a CDO warehouse would be open. The dealer who's underwriting the deal would lend money into a warehouse to the CDO, such the manager could purchase collateral. When the CDO securities were issued, the manager would be paid back. So the numbers on it, if it's a $1 billion deal in my example for BlackRock, BlackRock might buy $500 million of collateral. Deutsche Bank would lend the money to the CDO to do it. Not BlackRock, they're the manager, but the CDO. Then at the time of CDO issuance, CDO company would issue $500 million of securities, actually, securities plus some preferred shares. And that would be used, that would be used to pay off Deutsche Bank's warehouse loan. However, Deutsche Bank's loan is paid off with a loan amount. So if we have Deutsche Bank, and on my example, lends for 500, Deutsche Bank receives 500 back. It doesn't matter what the value of the underlying collateral is. And CDO business at the time, the loan's paid off. Meaning that it becomes very complicated to hedge. So for example, let's say, I think of this business as a principal business that we have $500 million of risk on. Once BlackRock's bought $500 million of securities. And the CDO doesn't happen, that's Deutsche Bank's problem. We're going to make or lose money depending on where the collateral is priced. However, if the CDO does happen, we get $500 back. Our loan is paid off. So let's say the securities increase in value from $500 million to $600 million during the warehouse period. That's great, except Deutsche Bank doesn't get our $500 million back, and the CDO investors have the satisfaction knowing they have another 20% of market coverage, another $100 million. There's no repricing of the assets. Meaning that if Deutsche Bank had hedged that asset pool at the money, as it were, we'd be at $100 million. First, the answer is that we make money in the hedge, it wouldn't be repriced. But what it meant was that was how this managed CDO business was structured by custom. You made it challenging to hedge the business at the money in a possible way. So, one.
All right, just to clarify for the record, I may understand some things, but this is a case that is not just for my use by any means. So I think what you're saying, and again, correct me if I've been misstating anything, is assets are purchased into the warehouse at market prices along the way, but they are not, when they go into the CDO, repriced at the new market price, so that if you were hedging the change in market price from the time of purchase to the execution of the CDO, not helpful to you because at the end point you're only getting back your original market price from the CDO.
Yes. Which then.
That may not have been a clear explanation that you were, but there we have it.
It was certainly clear. And with that, it defined in many ways our approach to not just the ABX CDO business, but also how we looked at within the CDO primary business, leverage loans, CLOs of leverage loans, trust preferreds, and other asset types. Because, you know, each CDO that we put on, we effectively were long the risk. And it was challenging. We did certain things. We talk about challenging to hedge it in any way. So one particular reason why over the years, really beginning in 2000 with the advent of the ABS CDO market at Deutsche Bank, we stayed focused on that in ABS, to limit our risk. And the risk wasn't, in our minds, that the assets would go down to 50% or 75%. The challenge was that, let's say the assets went down 5 or 10 points on $2 billion of assets, and we couldn't get the CDOs done because of market problems, which actually really didn't happen to us at all in this period until late, but let's say it did happen. We could lose $2 billion across the QCDOs down 5 or 10 points. You could lose $100 to $200 million. And then these assets, triple B ABS, single B leverage loans, even single A ABS, single A ABS CDOs, a 5 or 10 point drop is not par for the course. It's really not at all an unusual event to think about. And in my example, let's say we had $2 billion on our line at any time, is maybe a bit high, but not atypical for how we ran our ABS CDO business. We lost 5 or 10 points. We'd be down $100 to $200 million. The business made $200 million a year. That would have horrible consequences for us. So,
sorry, on a typical deal, just to keep it in the point comparison, you would make a point, 2 points.
Our fee rate on managing ABS CDOs, where we were taking the risk in the structure. BlackRock structure example I discussed would typically be 1.25%, 1.5%. So on a $1 billion deal, $12.5 to $15 million. So the idea of losing, look back to $1 billion, $50 million, because the assets were down 5 points, there was a market disruption, we couldn't sell the CDO, certainly daunting. So the original question that sparked this discussion was why mess CDO, if that was an important reason. Because as the messing CDOs, we could calibrate the fees somewhat to what we thought the risk was, and also just generally keep the exposures low. As we, looking at high grade, $5 billion, $10 billion, $15 billion on your line, those deals just as easily, I mean, they're single ABS, they could maybe not go down quite as much as triple ABS, but they're certainly similarly volatile, and with typically 30% ABS CDO buckets, you could easily be looking at losses in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So
sorry, inherent in what, implicit in what you're saying is that the size of high-grade deals tended to be 2 to 4 times that of mezzanine deals.
Yeah, the typical high-grade deal is $1 billion to $2 billion. So there you might, if it was a managed deal where the dealer was lending money against assets acquired, you might see a $2 billion deal, $1 billion of assets, the average balance in the warehouse, the deal were not to happen, and the dealer could lose part of his money. And the particular challenge with high grade was that the particular challenge with ABS is it takes a long time to aggregate. That changed somewhat with the advent of synthetics in 2006 and started to go into CDOs. The warehouse periods were typically 12 to 18 months, if not longer, in the 2002 to 2005 timeframe. So they're fairly harrowing numbers if you reflect upon them. Even the billion-dollar deal example I gave you, if you're running at a $300 million average collateral balance, these deals often close with half the collateral around. If the deal were down 10 points, you could lose $30 million, which in the context, if the deal didn't close, your $3 million of collateral, you liquidated and lost $30 million. In the context of the losses realized in the industry in 07 and 08, doesn't sound like much, but that was a harrowing number as you plan for the business. The business, that P&L is $100, $200, $300 million.
And if I may, was this sort of analysis driven by you? And you're coded by your manager, by the risk manager?
I'd say it was a collaborative effort. Management view was high grade was tough. Our view and management's club view was high grade ABS was a tough asset because of its sheer size. KNL just did not justify the size. High grade ABS CDOs paid 50 basis points, 75 basis points. It simply wasn't an effective use of balance sheet. It was too much risk. And then the subtlety of the hedging point was certainly grasped at some level by our credit and market risk departments, Patrick Romain, Andre Clement, and credit risk, and market risk deserve a lot of credit because, you know, if I wanted to in CDO firing, we didn't, you know, frankly, we never could have spun the wheel at a $10 billion or $15 billion funded business.
Sorry, would you mind repeating?
Sure. In our credit department, Patrick Romain and Andre Cormeau and Nick Fries in our market risk department, who looked after my book in the period 2004, 2007, 2008. And it's not that they told us we couldn't do certain things, but that they didn't have a formulaic approach to this risk. Their view was, you have a line of a few billion, but to put more risk on, only if you sell the last part of the risk. Okay, you have a limit of X. Checks the box, but it was. I think Deutsche Bank in general was a collaborative, very entrepreneurial in a positive way, and collaborative. And this is one place where it showed how we actually, without doing high grade, still managed the business such that we had a reasonable place in league tables and made money, which we had to do, which was our problem in CDO primary.
Right. For better or worse, the reason you're here today is Deutsche Bank was generally in the top five. Not every year, but you were top three.
That's right, and that was, you know, within contemporaneous business plans with these events and actual press interviews as well, we were open about the fact that our business goal was to be in the top five, and in good times, the top five, and bad times, the top two. And that's what happened in 2007, in 2006, the third in the league tables, the Securities Data Corp league tables. I think we had $23 billion of issuance. Citi was 36, and Merrill was 50. Admittedly, we were third by them. Rate was 18, so that was good enough to make the outcome for them. And 07, when league tables frankly didn't matter that much, the calendar year of 07, we were the, what it's worth, International Financing Review CDO House of the Year. We were there at the end of the year. And that's exactly how it played out. You know, in 07, we to make money, we lost a little money, but we made it through the year. And you know, I think if the markets had come back in any way similar to where they were before, in a way, we would have been back in the business really shut down. Always comes back.
So, Deutsche Bank did not have material losses in your business in 2007.
2007, the CEO of primary business in the U.S., down, I may be off 100, down 200 million or so.
That's not some change.
No, it's not. And certainly, it's, you know, losing money is a poor result. My understanding and information belief of the third in the league tables is about 6. The results of the 1, 2, and 4 parties in the league tables were down $15 to $40 billion.
Fair enough. Big multiple. So over the course of several years, you were net positive for the business, which cannot be true.
Net positive flat. It's hard. These numbers were so. I mean, the numbers were. It's hard. I wasn't there in 2008, so I don't know what numbers then. I thought it was in the middle of the year, but probably yes, we were made it out here, I would say.
So can we talk a little more about the development of synthetics and that how that changed your business and also changed the marketplace in which you were executing the business?
Synthetics in regard to which market?
It's still focused on ABS, but actually the broad array of mortgage credit derivatives. So obviously the development is pay-as-you-go swaps, provided the raw materials for synthetic CDOs. And if you want to take each of these developments point by point, that would be great. But there's that, there's ABX, there's, in fact, you know, the synthetic CDO, which had not existed.
Right.
Those are the top three.
Okay. Well, on the ABS CDO side, synthetic, I'm not able to do it first, single lane ABS. The first knowledge I have of synthetic single lane ABS is in 2000, when certain dealers who had subprime home loan books began to buy synthetic protection against future issuance. Not a big size. UBS Principal Finance was active, a few other dealers. Then, as I'm sure you're aware, around 2004, 2005, single name pay-as-you-go, RMBS began to trade synthetically. Eventually, just as with corporate investment grade CDS and leverage loan CDS, dealers came together and established the format for a residential mortgage synthetic single name, it's going to begin to trade actively.
Were you involved in those, or was that all those meetings and hammering out the template, or was that all Greg Lipman?
That was true. So yes, a template was initiated, and then ABX, the ABX indices, was established with market and a group of dealers working together, and I believe. And the last step in that evolution is PABX, the Tronic JDX Index of February 7. In terms of the CDO market, we began to see synthetics very lightly into certain ABS CDOs in 2005, I believe, before the establishment of the standard template for RMBS CDS on a one-off basis, but very, very rarely. And with the establishment of the template for RMBS CDS, we began to see it into typical ABS CDS, just not mean CDS, of course, because typically the only synthetics traded were BBB and BBB minus rated RMBS. So those are mezzanine CDS, CDS with BBB and some by BB concentration. And that those then, as the market developed, there was more volume. Again, driven by some of the virtuous circle, there were investors who wanted to short that market and to get the ones to buy it, and that is those then, I'd say in early 06, half of mezzanine ABS CDO volumes were synthetic versus cash, and coming into the second half of 06, that increased to 80%
There's really a profound shift in Deutsche Bank's O6 deals from cash to very heavily.
Yes, and our mezzanine CDOs, in the managed mezzanine CDOs, for example, you can look at an O5 deal managed by Fisher Francis, Commodore 4, has a 62% cash and 38% synthetic bucket. If you look a year later, longer, at probably now the CDO managed by Smith Breeden Associates in the fourth quarter of 06, it's 80%. That's actually 80% cash and 20% synthetic. Bad example. But Halcyon ABS CDO is actually a third cash, two-thirds synthetic, which is what that would seem to me in late 06 be more the typical composition of a mezzanine ABS CDO, managed mezzanine ABS CDO. Two-thirds synthetic, a third cash, or so.
So, talk about 06 and that shift to synthetics. You know, hedging is different with synthetics. Volume appears to be very different with synthetics.
Volume for?
For creation.
So you're talking about hedging for market participants, hedging for...
I'll be clear. I was referring to your prior statement about the challenges of hedging business. Actually, once you're using those remarks, I took as generally referring to cash collateral and not to synthetic collateral.
Well, actually, those remarks actually applied to synthetic collateral. So the problem wasn't whether it was cash or synthetic collateral. It was the fact that the dealer was lending against these assets and the assets weren't repriced, whether cash or synthetic. Where it's hard to follow the chain, and for me sometimes too as I think about this, is that in these deals that were one-third cash, two-thirds synthetic, for example, I just gave Halcyon ABS, the same structure. There's a Cayman Island company which is buying these assets, Deutsche Bank's lending like cash assets. Deutsche Bank, there's no money lent against the synthetic assets, but Deutsche Bank is taking a risk for the CDO prices. So it's exactly the same dynamic. So the fact that synthetics exist doesn't change whether it's a cash bond or synthetic instrument representing the same bond, it's the same price move up or down. Same problem. So you still, all the synthetics exist, you still have the problem you can't have these absolutely full. So, you know, if you look at, to give my...
So you would have the start of the credit protection be relatively immediate rather than a forward...
Exactly. There were some, in 04, when before the template CDS document for RBS came out, excuse me, it was a bit more of a bespoke negotiated type of product. There were indeed a small number of CDS bound with small synthetic buckets where the CDS was written on a forward starting basis, maybe an 04, but it was very small. I mean, really, that this market was, the way to think of this market is that the template RMBS CDS instrument was acquired and managed in primaries, CDO primary, in our business, and CDO primary managed CDOs exactly like cash bond was. There was no difference. So back to my earlier example, $1 billion deal, $500 million acquired prior to the closing. Whereas in 05 that might have been $500 million of cash, BBB RBS. In 06 that might have been $250 million of cash RBS, $250 million of synthetic RBS. The synthetic RBS acquired same over a year, 6 months. At the pricing on the day it came into the warehouse, not remarked when the CDO closes. Exactly the same as the cash bond, except it is not funded.
Was it your experience that the ramp-up period prior to closing the deal was significantly shorter when you were doing a synthetic transaction?
Somewhat shorter. I mean, I would have thought that in practice. If it was 6 months to a year or longer prior, maybe it became 4 to 8 months. But the managers
in our CDO, the Deutsche Bank CDOs, we're still going, running the bonds through their credit process. We're seeking to, just as they would, find the best price in a cash bond from different dealers, find the best synthetic price from different, best price on synthetic RBS from different dealers. There certainly was faster, but it was still, it wasn't for most, as I recollect, in our business, the huge blocks of assets came in. It was a similar acquisition process. It was slightly faster. It was a managed CDO primary deal.
Is it your perception or recollection that that was true among your competitors? Or were they ramping materially faster?
I don't know. Sure. Yeah, obviously, you know, our main competitors in the CDO space had more volume than we did. So in that sense, they were ramping faster. But in terms of individual ramps on deals, I don't know if those were faster or not. Okay.
Do you think it's a fair statement to say that the advent of the single name CDS, maybe CDS, helped facilitate the cash or hybrid market? Because even though the development was in synthetic collateral, that it facilitated the growth or continuation of the cash market by helping to sort of complete portfolios. That you couldn't, whereas when you were dealing exclusively with cash collateral, you had to wait for that cash collateral to be available. Once there was synthetic collateral available, you could complete a ramp up easier, faster, with greater diversity.
That's certainly true at the individual deal level. Obviously, if you're a billion-dollar deal, you can not buy $1 billion in cash assets for $500 million to close it. Then you can buy mostly synthetics, and you can buy them more quickly. That certainly helps that individual deal close. But I take your question to be more an industry basis, digital system growth of the cash market. I think the opposite is true, that if the synthetic market hadn't risen, CDO demand was where it was in 06 and 07 from investors and CDO tranches, there would have been an incredible squeeze on BBB and BBB minus RMBS assets, which would have created more demand for those cash assets at higher prices, which whatever the outcome of that, more demand would have driven mortgage issuance, but it certainly would have driven less. And indeed, BBB assets, which were not typically done synthetically, that's what happened in 06 and 07. They squeezed in, pricing squeezed in there fairly tight to BBB and BBB minus RBS. So let's look at the rating gap, which is a bit tighter than one would expect, because most mezzanine ABS CDOs had small buckets for BB, say 5%, because the amount of issuance that became quite a big number, all had to come from cash. It was hard product to find, and it was indeed tightened in quite a bit.
Again, restating what I think you said, then on balance, it's your view that the development of synthetics sort of replaced supply and sated demand for these mortgage assets rather than continuing to fuel and increase demand for the cash assets. I want to go back to some of your earlier comments for a minute.
You spoke about arbitrage being sort of a fundamental feature of this market. There are some academics who have written that arbitrage is supposed to, by its nature in a market, be a sort of a temporary, or somewhat temporary misalignment of pricing. So my question to you is, were these deals arbitraging price differences between different markets, or were they fundamentally arbitraging rating agency methodology, as some academics have argued?
Right. Well, I think the efficient market view of arbitrage is certainly one of what it's worth. Agree with for market microstructure, equity arbitrage, fiscal arbitrage, etc. These markets are a little different because they're you know, these are not exchange traded instruments that we've been talking about as collateral for the CDOs. They're somewhat thinly traded credit instruments. I think you mentioned rating arbitrage. I think the place to start to talk about this perhaps is, you know, where this market started in leveraged loans.
Actually started in high yield bonds.
That's as good a place as any to start. Absolutely. So, you know, it was pretty simple. The high yield, if investors were willing, real money investors, insurance companies, asset managers, hedge funds, say in the 90s, were willing to pay, 8% for single B and double B, that's probably one of them. Just 8% for double B high yield bonds, and the CDO could create demand such that it could buy the asset 6%, still finance AAA, AA, single A, triple B debt, and a return to the preferred shares. So it's in the context of the market, say, 15-15%. That's an arbitrage that worked. But it's not an arbitrage that could be executed by a trader in a pit or someone putting orders on for not humans that we still did then. It's really for the last 10 years, take a while to put it together. And indeed, the best way, as I think about it, to answer the markets question is, as time passed in the CDO market in the 90s, and even the asset-backed market in 2007, what would happen is that the deals would become market term, not very scientific, custody. That the assets would price to the CDO arbitrage, and it would work or it wouldn't. And sometimes, indeed, in the leveraged loan market in particular, 2001, I think, there was a period of time when the arbitrage just didn't work. There were no deals. And there was a period of time in the ABS CDO markets, where the same thing happened. It was just for a while, the arbitrage simply didn't work. So, your question also alluded to rating agency arbitrage. I think it's a separate matter. I think on the market side, the reason why you wouldn't necessarily see asset pricing reset to CDO demand instantaneously is that CDOs are, by definition, they're structured investment vehicles that take a while for them.
Do you care to comment about the rating agency arbitrage?
In regard to which asset class?
ABS.
Well, I think it was the agencies made no secret throughout the last 10 years of how they approached the rating of asset-backed CDOs. And broadly, their methodology incorporated some pretty severe stresses, but, and this is not an area I really work with much in my time at Deutsche Bank. I stepped away from structuring deals in 2001, 2002, so I didn't spend much time with the agencies. However, I think most of the industry would agree that the rating agency stresses were severe, but did not assume a correlated downturn in U.S. housing. as they publicly pronounced. They looked to the Texas recession in the 80s, California on the brink of aerospace crisis and other industry crises in the 90s, and they used that to create stresses. And within there, they obviously had each of the agencies, this Iraqi space, obviously had teams of PhDs, committees to set structure, set the collaborative, set the criteria. I think at a general level, though, a fair summary is that their view is that there hadn't been a correlated national stress since the Great Depression, even a long time ago, but they would use severe stresses on a regional basis. I drove there. The CDO, they had an RMBS methodology for RMBS. Have a CDO correlation, that would be over, I guess, that they had developed.
Did you have conversations over the years with investors on this issue about correlation, about their understanding of rating agency models and how they got to the results they did?
I must have when I was structuring deals in the late 90s and early in my career at Deutsche Bank. I don't recall any specific conversations that I had with investors and CEOs during my time.
Do you have any general sense of what you think investors, there may have been a range based on the investor community is a very heterogeneous community, but what did investors think, understand, assume? Was it, were they buying because there was a rating and that was it, or was there a more sophisticated understanding?
Well, as you'd expect from our previous discussion, I'm not that familiar with the high-grade ABS-CDO buyer base. Active with it. The mezzanine ABS-CDO buyer base consisted of, or at least to whom we sold, were institutions, insurers, all of whom were well-staffed, had been in the business for a while. Although I don't recall any specific conversations with them, my view is that the previous statement that I made about the housing market is something that presumably they knew about and they're making these investments about this or own.
What's your explanation for why there was such a wipeout in this asset class?
Which asset class?
ABS-CDOs, unless I specify otherwise. Let's start. Was there a wipeout in other types of CDOs?
There were from a price on a price basis. Although many of that has since come back, as we said today. So certainly leveraged loan pricing for CDO CLO pricing went down dramatically. I think tranches went down 50-60 points. AAA tranches went down 30-40 points. It's extraordinary drops, which is now come out all the way back. Most of the way as loan pricing has increased. Leveraged loans went down 40 points. So single B leveraged loans generically went down 40 points. And that translated into the CLO prices we just discussed. So it certainly wasn't just ABS CDOs as an asset class that had a wipe out. That said, mezzanine ABS CDOs in particular, a lot of the collateral went to 10 cents on the dollar, which obviously had problems. And I think more surprisingly to market participants, the high grade ABS CDOs had problems. Single A and double A. RMBS had severe problems, which is where most of the losses in the space came from. Why did it happen? Because the deal performed badly. Why did it perform badly? Because the mortgages weren't paid. Why weren't the mortgages paid? you know, U.S. economy, they originated in the event, according to the criteria that the banks were being used, and there's a variety of explanations. But all that, I hope that's responsive. You know, our job in CDO primary and my own view of the market was to be agnostic to these assets. You know, our business was to make new issue fees, make sure that the market did have a downturn, we were somehow hedged, either through actual hedges or, as a matter in this market, actually by through various types of business strategy, and to, you know, continue to issue new issue deals. So, you know, I certainly, in the event it did indeed turn out that these from a CDO perspective, and my bonds were more correlated than expected, they all need to perform the same, many of them, maybe a CDO market. And that clearly reflects problems in the residential mortgage market. But I don't, you know, I have a clue that you can talk about more, but I don't, you know, it wasn't how we in CDO primarily really, it wasn't something we brought to the table. We brought in our asset managers to take these assets.
But I'm intrigued by your saying you were supposed to be agnostic. Is that because when synthetics developed, you had to have a short to offset the long, or vice versa? Were you always supposed to be agnostic?
No, I think certainly our job was, in CDO primary, was to create CDOs in order to issue fees that we thought would be attractive to the market, where we had risk that we could control. How did we do that? We worked with what we thought were the better managers in the space. We made decisions about what type of deals we should do to manage our risk and maximize our fees. But in general, you know, we, beyond those kind of broad decisions, we left it to the BlackRock, the Wells Fargo Foothills to take the assets.
I'm pausing because I'm trying to do this in some organized fashion rather than just flip from topic to topic. Give me a moment. Sorry. I guess I don't want to leave the subject of investors before moving on to asset managers. And I also don't want to leave the subject of sort of what went wrong. I guess there are two. Among the many views of what went wrong, two analytically sort of views are, one, that it was all the RMBS, it was all the underlying collateral, they performed miserably. The triple Bs, of course, performed worse than double A's and single A's and double A's. But someone said these assets that we thought were sort of a single A risk really were a single B risk, as one way to summarize that. Another view, another criticism could be that, well, we, if you will, the correlation assumption of the CDO rating agency methodology was itself flawed. Perhaps in hindsight, but that's the alternative view. So I guess I want to know whether you agree or disagree with that perspective.
Well, so your question is, was there perhaps there was, there's two potential explanations for problems in the ABS CDO space. The first is that the RBS ratings were fundamentally flawed, that single risk was actually a single B risk, for example, or secondly, the correlations on the ABS CDO side were fundamentally flawed. One, not to be tendentious, but one of the problems here is that all of these assets have horrible problems, and it's easy in hindsight to look back and assume because we went down the path of everything defaulting, a lot of things defaulting or having severe problems, that was preordained instead of being one path we could have taken at the time. That said, given the scale of the event in asset-backed and asset-backed CDOs, I think that's a tough approach to take. So the answer is presumably in hindsight a bit of both, that the ratings were a bit challenged at the basic level and that the correlations were, I think, prima facie too high, given the correlations turned out to be close to 100%. I'd argue otherwise. But that said, it's very, in my mind, it's, you know, this was an open, the agencies were an open book at the time of these, at the time of the growth of the ABS CDO market in 2005-2007. No secret what they were doing. There were alternate viewpoints, broadly available in the market from respected practitioners, both pro and con, street research and others. Investors were buying this paper, although I can't recall any direct conversations, you know, our investors were sophisticated institutions, insurers. We didn't sell the retail. It was no secret how these bonds were being evaluated. I think the hindsight, obviously, that there were flaws. But again, it was information kind of held by all the time as well as that happening in the marketplace.
Particularly since you did focus on the mezzanine deals, so you're focusing on lower rated collateral that will take a hit sooner than higher rated collateral. Did any of the risk management people, was anyone sort of challenging, critiquing, questioning the assumption that there would be disparate performance?
Well, a triple B class.
Well, I think your question, implicit in your question, that we had that risk management, the primary management would focus on the collateral warehousing. We were warehousing for CDOs at any time, for ABS CDOs at any time, as just a pure principal position. I mean, certainly that was part of their perspective. But you must remember, you know, when I say we might have $2 billion of ABS CDO exposure, we might be at $2 billion online on our warehouse lines across fields at this point, say 2006, 2007. We're lending against an asset pool selected by a BlackRock, Western Asset Management, an Oak Hill, a Willis Fargo Foothill, and the risk is, of course, to some extent we have risk if the entire market seizes up, but the risk is we can't syndicate that transaction. It's a new issue transaction. So, you know, risk for CDO primary, I think, is quite different than for a trading account where the trader is simply long or short, could sell the collateral tomorrow, could not. CDO primary was a new issue business where managers would select assets. In a way, you could think of it as we were building closed-end funds for a period of time. Closed-end fund is pool bonds. It changes over time. It's financed in the retail markets. These are pools of bonds that are funded in the CDO market. So, absolutely. I mean, but it wasn't so much, hey, this asset is particularly challenged. As noted earlier, there was a level of comfort we had in the managed CDO primary business, how much we just wouldn't take any risk, which equated more with the potential price ball of the asset, given its rating, the P&L of the business, as compared to, you know, we're long this risk, we would watch it because we got a price tomorrow. Well, were we long in CDO primary? We were long
at the back end at risk if nothing worked out. What we really wanted was we needed to sell a deal, managed CDO. So I'm trying to wrap it. It's years ago, I'm not talking about the events of 06 and 07. Obviously, as the pricing on triple B RBS went from the mid 80s in February of 07, 50 or 60 in summer of 08, that caused concern, obviously, because that led to the conclusion perhaps that we wouldn't be able to sell these deals. It happened before we had a warehouse in August 07. We then went on the few deals we had in orderly fashion and then moved on and focused on other things. However, you know, I'd characterize management's approach to risk, ours in the business, the risk and market risk, as you know, more focused on the managed aspect of these deals. You know, we want to contain the damage if the talent that we can't do these deals in a regular market.
I guess what I was trying to get at is, at least in retrospect, many conclude that the rating agencies made a mistake, a big mistake, and various market participants lost hundreds of millions or billions of dollars as a result. But we don't know who in the market had an incentive to critique the rating agency models, to say, you got it, you know, your correlation assumption is wrong. The CDO methodology is wrong.
Well, that's an interesting question. You'd asked me earlier about the role of synthetics in expansion CDO volumes in 05 and 06, and my response probably was, in my mind, synthetics didn't expand the cash business without synthetics, there was more cash. What wasn't available in 05 and 04 was the ability of those who would care, which are investors who wanted to short the market, to short the rating tranches. That only came about, really, with the advent of TABAX in February of 07. So, who were the constituents who could take that view? Well, many did after February of 07. TABAX pricing, I think it opened up at 85 on the senior drops in CapEx in February. So many market participants indeed did have that view. But there was no way to express it until February of 07.
So did the advent of CapEx kill the ABS CDO market?
It assisted in its death. If you look at the period 05 to 07, implicit in these incredible volumes at dealers was that they were taking naked the super senior risk on the field. They're taking naked all the risk. Like, as you know better word, it's starting to cross selling and mezzanine tranches. So what risk would be taking if in hybrid deals, which were the top of the capital structure? Equity is so small, the mezzanine tranches take the ones that were CDOs. After TABAX came out, pricing in that risk became more and more apparent to risk managers and management. Before TABAX, because there was a way to short the single name market, there was no way to short that market. If that had been available in 0405, perhaps things would have come out different. Maybe not.
Most people say TABAX was not successful.
I think those certainly from a trading volume perspective, it wasn't successful, but the price discovery was a wake-up call for the market, and that particularly the top of the TABAX structure, the pricing implied, you know, super senior and a high-grade deal or net deal was 97 today. Now, there were all statuses on the index, 20 bonds, but one could argue they were, because of the nature of the hedging,
the nature of the selection process, they were selected to be a bit more volatile for price than the rest of the index, et cetera. They weren't, but nonetheless, you know, the price discovery was important.
When we were speaking before about Deutsche's risk exposure, the focus was primarily on the warehouse. Were you also taking super senior risk and putting it on your books?
In volume? Once or two or three times in the 8 years I was there, like Avipedia primary, there was some takedown into various vehicles, but broadly, no. We weren't taking super senior risk. To the extent we ended up holding it, hitting the 7, it was a secondary trading position because we couldn't sell a deal.
Although the tape will keep running, it's okay if you want to take a break.
I still have some more coffee, I feel like.
Okay. Or if you need a break, also. Fine. In your view, was the high grade CDO bid for parts of the mezz CDO capital structure important in keeping that market going?
Yes.
Were those really the predominant buyers, other CDOs?
If I had to guess, I would say industry-wide, I'd say high-grade and mezzanine CDOs probably had a 50% market share of other CDOs. Maybe higher at the high-grade level.
Were there deals that you were involved with or aware of that you weren't involved with where you knew that close to the time of the creation of the deal someone was going short some tranche and long another tranche? Did that become an important part of investor demand?
So just to make sure I follow. So the question is, if around the time of CDO creation, so closing, an investor take high piece of structure and shorts something else, and what the something else would be?
Some other part of the structure.
The CDO.
Or EX or some
right.
other
right.
synthetic.
Yes, and there was notably, it's sort of public at this point, that Magnetar, that was part of their strategy. They bought quite a bit of ABN CDO equity for shares in the 06 and 07 period, primarily in mezzanine ABN CDOs. And although this is on information belief, I haven't seen their trading books, market understanding that they shorted some positions against the FLA or ABX or single names or CDOs as part of their strategy.
And were they a significant buyer of equity in Deutsche Bank's deal?
We did one deal with Magnetar, or Carina One. They purchased $8 million of equity. I don't have any knowledge of their shorting strategy associated with that purchase.
And did they often equity buyers and other investors in CDOs reviewed the collateral, said, I don't like this, I do like that. Did Magnetar play that role in your recollection?
They did not. My recollection of their role was that they acted as a typical equity investor in a CDO, CLO, in that they system-setting parameters were had a view on we like more triple B and less double B, structural point.
but in terms of your question, I believe, was to individual collateral selection, they played no role.
And was that deal in which they invested, was that a triggerless deal?
My recollection is that deal had triggers.
To your recollection, did you do many, did Deutsche Bank do many deals that were triggerless deals?
I can't recall any. It doesn't mean they're worth any.
The Carina deal was managed by State Street.
State Street Gold Advisors.
In 06. And just from your understanding, it was subsequent to the closing of that deal, what's your understanding of Magnetar's strategy and whether they were successful in that strategy?
Well, my understanding is they purchased equity across a number of ABS CDOs, and that they hedged against that equity instruments that we discussed. They were wildly successful, although my own belief, the kind of conversations with them, that was an unexpected byproduct. And my understanding of their strategy was that they intended to earn, to create a strategy whereby they'd earn a hedge fund return, a mid-teens return, and that's sort of between 15% to 20%, regardless of the performance of the collateral. In the event, I was say, very large price draws, which resulted in the profits for them, and many more, because they were one part long to pick a number. I don't know what it was, four parts short. It was a 90-point deficit and quite a bit of money. But my own view is that that was a bit of an unexpected outcome. Not based on conversations.
Were there other investors that you knew at the time or have heard of since who followed similar strategies?
Yes, that was a fairly common strategy across all three into the 2007, both dealer process and hedge funds would effectively need to be described in a lot of different ways, whether it's own some high-paying equity, which could be in the CDO, in the ABX, on the TABX, with our own correlation structure to defray the cost of shorts, whether it's a correlation desk on the street side that might short CDO tranches and hold delta against it, type of strategy, where you're basically long, high-paying, low rate of risk, short, higher paying risk, or short, higher rated, lower coupon bank risk, in terms of it's the tried and true strategy across not just ABS, but leverage loans, corporates, and do that.
And do you think that that therefore made up a significant part of the demand for what perhaps was previously hard to place CDO equity?
Certainly did for Magnetar, was had a big market share for mezzanine and ABS CDO equity in 2006-2007. My guess is it would be a third to 40% in the marketplace. They stopped in late 2006, so let's call it just 2006.
Do you think that, in your opinion, did asset managers have adequate incentives for picking the best collateral?
So your question is, did asset managers have adequate incentives? So I guess one way to start the answer would be, what were the incentives? It was twofold. Firstly, the fees that the asset managers
earned on the vehicles. Typically structured as senior Bs, subordinate Bs, beneath the performance of the triple B-rated CDO tranche and perhaps the equity quicker on the back end, along with the benefit for some asset managers that with larger institutions, the ancillary benefit of increased assets under management. And probably some other ancillary benefits of the active market. So were those adequate? Certainly for the asset managers we worked with, and I went through the list of some from the starting list again, you know, they were typically large asset managers or established institutions to whom that type of fee arrangement, and in some cases the AUM, were an important part of their business. So the incentives were no different than closed-end fund they might manage, a hedge fund they might manage, other types of investments. Where it's a little more challenging, to answer your question, is for some of the smaller asset managers that were exclusively CDO-focused and commenced operations in 2005, 2006, primarily focused on the ABS CDO market, and we didn't work with any of those managers at CDO Fund.
So how were their incentives of the smaller managers perhaps inadequate?
Well, and I'm not alleging in any way that affected their credit process, but certainly a smaller manager commenced operations at that time was faced with a strategic business situation whereby they would need to create a number of deals to create a fee stream that could build their business and maintain the infrastructure needed for these assets. How that translates into practice is tough for me to say, because I think we didn't work with any of those managers, but I think it's a factual statement to make that managing one high-grade ABS CDO or one mezzanine ABS CDO, given the cost of data compliance, traders and the like in this business, is just not practical. So I think it's fair to say that the incentive setting described for an established asset manager could play out potentially differently for a smaller manager, although it's tough for me to say exactly how it works.
Putting words in your mouth, which you may accept or reject, that smaller managers may have felt greater pressure to get a deal done even if they had overall questions about asset quality in the market.
It's hard for me to respond to that. I think in detail, again, I don't have any specific knowledge of such managers or events. All these managers have fiduciary duties. I think it's factual to say that growth pressures for smaller managers commenced operations in that period would have required them to do a number of deals in a short period of time.
Generally speaking, did the larger asset managers that who were your clients, did they invest in the equity? Were they required to invest in the equity? How's that work?
Sometimes. I mean, the way this market evolved is that in 2001 and 2002, the market did require, the investors did require some equity participation. Some asset managers managed that, even if they were quite large, by deferring some of their fees to purchase equity. Starting in 2003, the general view of investors was that if it was a large asset manager or established platform, that wasn't necessary. We did have an active business in what we call portfolio financing, where we had asset managers buying the entire equity and taking the entire warehouse risk as well, which was a big part of our mezzanine ABS pipeline. But in the arbitrage deals, what we call arbitrage deals, where we put a pool together and Deutsche Bank had all the risk, it wasn't a market requirement that managers take a piece of the equity, which made it different for different types of managers, but certainly for our managers, it wasn't a problem.
I'm sorry, I lost you at one point where you were talking about it being a large part of your pipeline, and you were talking about the portfolio.
Right. Well, your question was that managers taking equity in certain deals we worked on, beginning early in 2002 or 2003, for Redwood Trust, publicly traded REIT, PCK, gemstone transactions, they took all of the equity.
warehouse risk, and then on the economics of the asset.
Okay, thank you. I'm trying a little bit to do two things.
It often doesn't work out for them. Thank you. I'm going to switch a little bit to the accumulation process when it was a synthetic collateral. Could you talk a little bit logistically how that worked, whether it worked in any way differently from cash collateral?
It did work differently in detail. At a higher level, though, in my assumption is after the same, that for cash bonds, our asset managers would, on behalf of the company, the CEO, would buy cash bonds into the deal. They would buy a bond during the warehouse period, and it would settle into the CEO. For synthetics, almost exactly the same thing happened. Asset manager would sell protection on the synthetic. It would settle into the CEO, but technically the way the deals were structured, it was a Deutsche Bank intermediated all of the synthetics. So there was one, I don't know what the master, whatever, it was a master agreement in which it faced the deal for all the CDS, which made it, from a rating agency perspective, mean that they could evaluate one credit counterparty as paying the protection payments on the synthetic. Whereas otherwise there would be, and there were some, very few deals done this way, where there were six counterparties, CDS, and just a mess. So eventually what happened at some point in 2005 was that all these synthetic CDOs were structured with the underwriting dealer separately acting as the intermediator. But the economics of it and the selection process were, in my mind, exactly the same.
You needed to have a short counterparty when there was synthetic collateral, aside from Deutsche Bank as intermediary. So the creation of that supply, can you talk about those logistics?
Well, that was, I can, although I think my answer is that was opaque in the CDO process. The way, one reason I use cash bonds as a comparison, the cash bonds were typically bought either on offer or from bid lists syndicated through major dealers, so J.P. Morgan, for example, CDOs. J.P. Morgan has bought on their offer sheet. CDO manager was the offer, was the CDO. Exactly the same thing would typically happen for the synthetic. J.P. Morgan shows out a list of 10 synthetics. CDO manager, self-protection, buys one of the CDO, and technically what you could be taking up. They just buy into the CDO. What J.P. Morgan is doing on the other side is okay for the CDO bank. Are they getting short with their own account? Are they crossing something in from the hedge fund? Are they going short but holding not so much because they have a different, they're shorting Countrywide 2006 Ford into CDO's direction of the manager, but they're short against it, what else, 2006 8B. CDO manager says, no, that's why it's exactly the same process as cash bond. Creation behind it was opaque to the CDO manager. And all the way that these were synthetics made their way in CDOs, that they were just as with cash bonds, either shown out on offer from dealers or shown out on bid lists.
And was there any strategy within Deutsche Bank or within other desks of Deutsche Bank that you knew, you're different from the CDO manager. So was there something else that you might have known of where to find shorts or how to get more of this collateral available? Was that part of your job? Were you aware of any of this?
Wasn't part of my job. I wasn't aware of any of it. I wasn't aware of any of that type of mechanic where there was. I'm not quite sure that I followed all the aspects of your question, but where there was a, I think, this is what I would say to make sure I followed that the, although I'd say it was opaque to the CEO, that behind the dealer there was something happening against towards the end of the deal. We just weren't involved with that super primary at all. And nor were we involved with the sale of cash box. So that was something that would be interesting. We take a 2 minute break while we have the tape rolling.
So if I can add just as I walk in the hall, I have to clarify my last answer. So I was, you know, my I framed the answer in the context of CEO primary. I think it was the right answer, but it is the case as well that for a few deals in our pipeline across the years, which I call more synthetic ABS CDOs, you know, it was the case that there were parties providing the collateral into the deal that were taking back some of the that in this subway. You have to exceed your primary any knowledge of where the shorts came from.
Right.
And there were a few synthetic ABS CDOs that I think you talked about with some of my colleagues where we exceed your primary was aware of how the shorts made their way into the deal.
Was that more in the static deals? Or?
Yes, the static synthetic. That's right.
Because I noticed you actually did a fair number of static deals.
We did a couple. We did, I think, 5 or so. No, 5 or 6. I think a number of the deals you have on the sheet that you showed me are actually deals, static synthetics, executed by the synthetic ABS CDO business, the ABS correlation business, which is a separate business of CDO product.
And you manage that.
Correct.
I've put you through a lot. We've been going through a lot. I need to just review my notes a little bit, but is there anything we've touched on or that I've asked about where I haven't asked a question that you would have wanted me to ask, so there's something else that you would like to add?